The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
The Chuck Oliver Show podcast is presented by Larceny Bourbon. So smooth, it's criminal. Larceny reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Southern Sports Today proudly presents The Chuck Oliver Show. It's an inside look at everything college football. Now live from Atlanta, Georgia, it's time to talk college football with the reigning king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
I have started to like something about Tennessee football. And I mean for this coming season, 2021. It is the Chuck Oliver Show on a Friday. Hope it has been a great week and you're just having a glorious Friday. Maybe it's the end of your work week if you're going to work on Friday, Saturday and Sunday. Well, good for you for having the work. But again, I appreciate everybody coming here this week as we continue to talk college football. I said there is something that I think I like something about Tennessee football. I'm starting to really like something about Tennessee football. And not just big picture, because, you know, maybe I like the AD hire for football. Well, that's a long range thing. Maybe if you like Josh Heupel, the Josh Heupel hire, well, that'll be good for every single day he's there. You imagine that there will be more tangible results to that maybe a little further down the road than, you know, immediately. But I think I like something about Tennessee football for right now, for this coming season, and it might be the running back room. Or at least the top two, or what it may look like come fall. We were talking Tennessee a couple days back, and we know about Gray and Chandler both flying the coop and making their own best deals, and good for them. Chandler lands at North Carolina. Eric Gray lands at Ty Chandler, North Carolina. Eric Gray lands at Oklahoma. And so, you know, I've always acknowledged there is a big, big, big difference between not having talent on the roster or in the position group and not having experienced, proven talent in that part of the two deep. There's a big difference. I've always said just because you haven't done it doesn't mean you can't do it. Now, there are plenty of places where you look around and you go, hey, where's the talent? Like, South Carolina has had a devil of a time with wide receivers. I've talked about, like, the Florida wide receiver position group, that there was a window there where they kept getting talented guys. That wasn't the issue. It's just that none of them seemed to – I would see them leave after two or three or four years and go, I don't believe I saw the best of Antonio Callaway. I just don't. And so that was kind of – but then that got fixed. But, you know, there are times you look at a position group and you go, I'm not getting production equal with the talent. That was kind of that Florida receiving group for, I don't know, 5 or 6 years, whatever. Then there are times like what I'm talking about with the South Carolina wide receiver group in some recent times due to injuries or whatever, or just not recruiting well, or drops mostly. And that's where you look at a two deep and go, hey, what happened to all their scholarships? Like, these aren't SEC sort of players. Now, I'm not even talking about, like, game wreckers. And whenever I mention that phrase, understand that's a capital G, capital W. I don't know at South Carolina if it's a lack of talent or lack of proven talent. I don't know, because I don't even know who's going to be playing there in August. Again, as far as integrating into the offense, whatever. 15 different, and you know all of them. But with Tennessee, they had proven, experienced talent at running back. Two of them, big-time players, gone. And so it's time for spring stories. And there are a couple of kids that were in the 20 recruiting class and played last year, but they get to be COVID freshmen. At least one of them does. Not sure how much second kid played, but They have two kids that were in last year's. They were true freshmen in last season. And they have been stories this spring. And in particular, the one kid. And so I asked a question. I think it was Wednesday we were talking Vols football. I can't even remember who we were talking to, and I apologize for that. But Jabari Small is a kid who was a freshman last year, and he played some. Had 26 carries for 117 yards. Now, you play in five games, and that's some experience, especially for an 18-year-old. You get some action. Had two carries against Kentucky, five against Alabama, eight against Arkansas, six against Vanderbilt, and he had one carry for 4 yards his last action of the year against Texas A&M. That's decent enough action, and in that it wasn't going to affect your eligibility, Tennessee was like, yeah, go get you some. 26 carries for 117 yards, again, in his true freshman season. He's been one of those spring stories. And the idea is that this kid may really be an answer, not just somebody taking advantage of upperclassmen going off for one showcase year. So that's a, like, normal-size-looking running back, Jabari Smalls, Jabari Small, 5'10", 195 pounds. And he's going to get bigger. In fact, he may already be 200. He's just a good, thick kid. But he's still growing. He's a true freshman, and they like him because he can kind of get into the pattern. He can catch the ball. Pretty versatile kid, but he is a normal running back-sized kid. The other freshman, yeah, he ain't. Dee Beckwith, that kid is about 6'4", 225 pounds. And as a running back, you stand out. Do you know who that – and actually, he's thicker than this kid. Do y'all remember Jalen Hurd? Big old tall kid wearing number one at Tennessee? And he's like, I'm leaving. Dysfunction. And I was like, oh, you quitter. And then about 2 weeks later, I was like – I went on the air. I was like, Jalen, I apologize. You were right. The adults in the room, they were the problem. So, Dee Beckwith, big running back. And got some experience last year, but compared to Jabari Small, I mean, it was a thimble. Yeah, not even like a real thimble. There's a thimble in Monopoly, right? Yeah, like the Monopoly thimble. That's how much experience Dee Beckwith got last year. Three carries. Two against Vandy, one against Texas A&M. Three carries, that was it. And so when I looked at their combined usage, and saw the I was like, these are just spring stories. Every single person with any sort of on-site insight has said, these two kids, we're ready to play SEC football with them. Now, settling the offensive line, I don't have that answer yet. And I'm, by the way, I'm saying what we were talking on air Wednesday, and then post-Wednesday, I spent the last 2 days just talking about five different Tennessee folks that I know. And all of them tell a version, a very close version, I mean, of the exact same script. And it's not sure how the offensive line shakes out, but running back-wise, we're going to surprise some folks because Chandler and Gray were already established as, hey, they're pretty big-time talents. And then I look on the roster, and everybody else looked on the roster at the beginning of spring practice and said, hey, they don't have any proven experienced talent anymore. The running backs, they may not be very good. And then you sing spring stories. And again, especially with Jabari Small. And every single person, same exact summary, that this is not a spring story, that this guy really can be a home run hitter and catching the ball as well. And again, whatever role Beckwith winds up with, it'll be a different role, but it'll be a role. And it might, I can't say equal role, because that's not how it's been talked about. And it also hadn't even been determined yet. But in the conversation, it's pretty clear that Jabari Small, he's got the bright light on him. But there's two of them, just like there were last year for the most part. So I think in quarterbacks, I'm not sure. Hendon Hooker should be the answer, and it was the answer, I think. Joe Milton decided, they're about halfway through spring practice. I'm going to decide to be one of those answers. So there's all kinds of questions. All kinds of questions. I don't think you have questions at running back. And at Tennessee, where, I mean, you look around, you got so much on your plate. Just kind of getting yourself a corner to fight out of, like I always say, get something settled. What do we think we can count on? And I'm telling you how much I like the running backs at Tennessee now. And again, this was 2 days ago, and I had been following it, but I was like, ah, spring story. No, it's not. I mean, it's universal. Everybody says, nope, they're going to be pretty settled at running back. Do you know how I think that they're going to show that this line of thinking is correct? I think tomorrow they're going to let those kids eat a little bit. I think tomorrow it's, you know, you've got quarterbacks that are set up for failure tomorrow. Because, again, it's not just the playbook, it is the pace. And you've got, if you've got a quarterback who's new to a system or a freshman who is new to any system, kid's going to line up behind the guard. He's going to forget the play call from, like, literally repeating it to the coach, and he's going to say, what was the play call? All of that stuff's going to happen. That's just normal stuff where we line up and run the power eye. Josh Heupel says, we're in the shotgun, and hurry up, folks. Let's go. The quarterbacks are built for failure tomorrow. You know how you can succeed? Hand it off to a couple of young studs who haven't had a chance to kind of establish themselves yet. Let them show to everybody that it really looks genuine. All these spring stories, yeah, all this stuff coming out of Knoxville, when it comes to the running backs, it looks real.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save. And save and win.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
It seems that he feels more comfortable. He's looked more decisive. The coaches have said he's been more decisive, especially when progressing through his reads and getting to his check down. So I would expect him to take a legitimate step forward.
That'd be Roddy Jones, former Georgia Tech football player. And now he is a color analyst with the ACC Network. And I believe it will be him, and is he doing it with Wesley Durham? I believe so. Wesley and Roddy maybe on the ACC Network. That's a guess of mine. I just made that guess. I believe it'll be Wesley Durham and Roddy. And Roddy was on this here program yesterday previewing Georgia Tech, the spring game that they have actually tonight. When did I say it was tomorrow? No, it's tonight. And talking about Jeff Sims, because I'd asked him about the development of the kid as he goes into year two, and that's not the real – that's not the biggest calendar. That's not the biggest mark in time regarding Georgia Tech or the offense or even that program. Jeff Sims going into year two, because he's going to be better. I've always said that playing in games, that's the one thing that really helps a quarterback get better. Playing in games has to be that. And you can improve, obviously. Chalk talk, film work, all of it, man. Practice, sure. Yes. Hanging out as a true freshman with the senior four-year starter and saying, all right, how did he become – okay. But year two of Jeff Sims is not the number that most Tech fans are thinking. They're thinking year three of Jeff Collins. And it's time to be better. And it's time to be better and have better show up in the standings, in the dubs and the L's. And they should – one thing about Chan Gailey, and boy, did that team underachieve. One thing about Chan Gailey was he stocked that program with NFL players. And I'm not just, you know, saying, you know, Vance Walker, who might have been a seventh round pick, and I believe that was a Paul player. I'm trying to remember. Dan, check. See if Vance Walker was a Paul Johnson player or a – he had to be a Chan Gailey player at Georgia Tech. Playing the role of Dan today is Matt Lear. So, you know, you have a fifth round, sixth round, seventh round pick. You have an undrafted free agent who gets into camp. He gets a contract. That's tremendous. And Georgia Tech had some of those with Chan Gailey. Do you know what Georgia Tech had a lot more of? They had a lot more first round picks, second round picks, third round picks. I mean, just tough. Seventh round pick. Just tough, tough looking kids for Vance Walker. Joe Anoa'i, do we remember him? Do you know who he became? He's Roman Reigns.
Yep, the Universal Champion.
He is just a massive, overly just – he's in as – for someone that big, because when you get big and bulky, you lose the ability to be so defined. No, not him. When he was still Joe Anoa'i and playing defensive tackle at Georgia Tech, I was at the game. I saw it happen. They opened the 05 season in Jordan-Hare. Brandon Cox threw a pick. I'm telling you, when Tech started returning it, Joe Anoa'i looked for the quarterback and tried to punch him in the face. Like, right under the face. I was like, all right, he's a defensive tackle. Playing ACC, big-time conference. I remember saying that Nick Fairley. Oh, he's got a terrible attitude. I was like, he's a starting defensive tackle in the Southeastern Conference. What kind of attitude do you want him to have? Joe Anoa'i? He did that to my team. Do you know what my response was? I'll take two. I will have two, please. I got a first-hand account, and I'll say it now because he retired. Actually, I think both of them retired, and I didn't mention this on the air. I'll say long time. It's been over a decade now. Former varsity basketball player at Georgia and then sideline reporter Chuck Dowdle. He was sideline reporter for – he did color commentary for basketball, but then he was sideline reporter for football. After the 2010 game at Auburn, which, I mean, Nick Fairley, folks, it wasn't just he became a black hat. That series became blood sport. And it had always been more brothers, at least cousins, but it had always been a great rivalry. Nick Fairley, the Nick Fairley game, it changed all that. Dirty, awful cheaters, allegations going back and forth. And I don't care about any of that. Don't even get into it. Don't care. Say what you want. You're a fan. Do it. But I'll recount this now. I don't know if I've said this on the air before, but leaving an away game that the team had taken buses to, Mark Richt would be in the state troopers car. They had like six state troopers cars to escort the buses and all. Well, one of them, the head coach, would sit in the passenger side in the front. Well, Chuck Dowdle said, I'd ride in the back. He said, so when we were leaving Auburn, he says, that night, Coach Rick just opened the back door, slid in, and just slumped down. Says Chuck got in. He's like, this 10 minutes after the game. Coach, what do you need to fix this? Quote, to Nick Fairley's. Like, the guy who had just watched Nick Fairley shake his quarterback around like a chew toy. That coach's first thing out of his mouth, two of them. So you need that attitude. Georgia Tech spring game tonight, year three of Jeff Collins. That's the number that the Georgia Tech fans are caring about, not year two of Jeff Sims. Year two should lead into a better year three and a better because, again, it's not just enough to improve and we have a higher quality product. You got to start seeing some wins.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save. and save and win.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
King of college football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
Nine states, 51 sticks every single day, talking some college football. Been doing it since the beginning of the 14th season. Thank you all for that blessing. I mean that. I appreciate it. I talked about this, maybe it was yesterday or maybe Wednesday, that if you're in the mood, if you are of a mind to have a little college football fun this weekend, well, tomorrow, I believe, broadcast to start at 4 o'clock local time, 5 o'clock Eastern on your SEC network, so on one of the channels. You have some college football fun available, and it's Lane Kiffin and the Ole Miss Rebels playing some sort of spring game, a Grove Bowl. And I looked, and I think what they're doing is first-team offense, second-team defense. I think that's what they're doing. And then maybe they divided up the third-team players after that. But want to bring on now from the Clarion Ledger, guy we've talked to before, does a tremendous job covering the Rebels football program. It is Nick Suss. Nick, how are you?
Hey, Chuck. I'm happy to be back, man.
Yeah, appreciate your time. Did I get that breakdown right? I might have been talking about Mississippi State's game.
No, you got it right. You got it right. The one variable that's not mentioned is the first-string offense is really Matt Corral and a bunch of third-stringers because of how many injuries they have this spring. But beyond that, yes, first-string offense, second-string defense, competing against first-string defense, second-string offense.
I was talking to a buddy who, you know, big fan, and I was like, I hear John Rhys Plumlee's having an okay spring, but it's for the baseball team. And I am really intrigued about his opportunity if he embraces it or chooses or if the coaching staff decides to. I think he's a pretty good candidate to be part of what replaces Yeboah and Elijah Moore and whomever else. I think Jerrion Ealy getting into the pattern even more. I think that there are options to replace some of that lost receiving talent. May not even be receivers.
Yeah, and I've kind of been beating this drum for a full 4 or 5 months now, and maybe it's wishful thinking as somebody who just likes watching cool-looking football, but Ole Miss has too many running backs this year to not end up using a couple of them on the field at the same time. So whether that means Jerrion Ealy is your feature back and Henry Parrish takes some routes in the slot, or it means Parrish is the feature back, Ealy takes some routes in the slot, or you have Snoop Connor at running back and yeah, work both of these guys as kind of your motion men like Elijah Moore kind of functioned as last year. You have a lot of options to do that, and you throw Plumlee into the equation, who kind of subtly is hitting 320 this year for the baseball team, so he's not making a mistake by playing baseball this spring, but you throw him in there and how good he looked in the slot against Indiana, you do have some formidable options to kind of play around and run a unique kind of offense. The question is, can Ole Miss afford to use Kincaid Dent as its backup quarterback or the early and early freshman Luke Altmaier as its backup quarterback and devote Plumlee to receiver full-time, or will he need to stay as the backup quarterback because of his experience as a contingency if Corral does get hurt? That will be the big, big question through the fall.
Drummond and Mingo and especially Braylon Sanders, I'm like, how long again have they? But who is among those? Like, if somebody's going to plant his flag and say, by golly, 2021's my season, just give me a flyover.
I think it probably has to be Braylon Sanders. The knock on Sanders is just health. If you want to talk how long he's been on campus, when DK Metcalf hurt his back 3 years ago, Braylon Sanders was initially the guy who came in as the, okay, he'll be Ole Miss's third receiver, instead of Elijah Moore. Braylon Sanders was the guy they thought would be the next guy in, and tears up his knee and tears up his ankle, and he's had just back injuries, just so many injuries year after year after year, and he's kind of been left behind on this depth chart as the fifth-year senior, but he kind of did emerge as the deep threat toward the end of last season, especially when Elijah and Yeboah had opted out in that LSU game. He looked really, really good. Then, of course, he gets hurt again in that LSU game, and he's been limited all spring, but Mingo has a ton of potential. He was brought here to be the next AJ Brown. Obviously, that hasn't panned out, but he has a very similar build, similar skill set. So maybe this is the year he breaks out. Drummond is another fifth-year guy, third year because of junior college. But they have the guys, and then they signed, I want to say, four or five pass catchers in this year's recruiting class. So maybe it's a freshman that steps up. But you never know. They have a ton of bodies, but I don't know who is going to be the A1 pass catcher.
Poached a kid from Western Kentucky, not the biggest kid in the world, but he's got to meet, he's like everybody, he's got immediate eligibility. Any sort of impression from the spring?
It's been hard because he's been one of the guys who's been out. As I've alluded to, the skill positions here have been decimated. There were practices where Jacquir Pearson, who's the guy you're referring to, out, and Sanders was out, and Mingo was out, and Drummond was out. And I'm watching the scrimmage where Corral's playing with the first team, and his number one receivers are Dennis Jackson, who's caught, I think, three passes in the last 2 years, Quay Davis, who is a junior college transfer, and Jaden Jackson, who I don't remember if he's ever caught a pass at Ole Miss. And that's your first team. And you get to the running back room. I may be mistaken, but I don't think any scholarship running backs are going to play in the Grove Bowl on Saturday. They just, if any guy has the measliest injury, Ole Miss isn't going to risk it. So the skill guys, it's been hard to get a read this spring.
Well, was there an objective, and I'm not being silly here, I mean, everybody needs to get better, especially quarterbacks. Was there a real objective for Matt Corral, given the fact that he's pretty accomplished, and it looked like a hand in a glove, him and Lane Kiffin's play calling, but and then also the fact that he wasn't playing with the guys that most likely he's going to be playing with. Like, was there a goal, an objective this spring?
When I talked to him and when I've talked to some of his teammates, it seems like the real strides he took or the objective he took this spring was from a leadership perspective, from a vocality perspective, being more of the guy in the room now that he's the redshirt junior who's got to take control. And he did that last year, but it's obviously a little different when you have Elijah Moore there and you have Royce Newman and Kenny Yeboah and some of these old hats on the team. So I think maybe that might have been the purpose, just to become more the face of the team. Last year, he didn't have a spring. He didn't have an off season. He was still mired in the competition with Plumlee seemingly until September 26th. Now that this is his team, I guess the goal this spring was probably treat it like that.
All right, you talk about getting better. Well, let's just throw numbers at it. And I think that there were maybe 12 early enrollees with some sort of role, either full-time or experimental on defense, including like six or seven in the secondary alone. Anybody jump out? Anybody kind of make a claim for playing time?
Yeah, the numbers are 10 early enrollees, 8 in the secondary, 1's injured, so it becomes 7. But Tysheem Johnson, a 4-star defensive back from Philadelphia, has been kind of the standout that people have been talking about a bunch. I think he's going to get a lot of early playing time. There's another 4-star from IMG Academy, Marquisius Brown, who has been playing corner and looked pretty good. I saw him 1 week nearly steal a pick six, and the next week steal the pick six he missed. He's a good ball hawk there in the secondary. But it's not just the early enrollees. It's a guy like Jake Springer from Navy who had to sit out last year because of transfer rules. But his last year at Navy, he had 16 tackles for loss and 8 sacks as a defensive back. It's a guy like DeAndre Prince, who 2 years ago started 4 games at Ole Miss, then went to junior college for a year, and came back to Ole Miss this year and has been rotating with the ones at corner. There, it's just a Otis Reese, even from Georgia, who only got to play 3 games.
Disaster last year.
He only got to play his 3 games last year, and he looked really, really good in those 3 games. But now he's getting a full off season as a starter who knows he's going to be a starter. It's so odd because this is a team that has 10 returning starters on defense, and I think returned virtually its entire second string. But you might only start four or five of the same guys from last year because you have so many new bodies, and now you have something that Ole Miss hasn't really had since before the probation hit, which is depth on defense.
Would you imagine, and by the way, brother, it's April after exactly one season. But as hard as it was last year defensively, and I don't think I'm being, you know, very provocative there, you got to hold people accountable if there's not, like, market improvement this year. And I know they swim in SEC West waters, and that ain't fun. But, I mean, this is big-time football. You got to produce or you don't.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I don't know that anyone is specifically on the hot seat yet because last year was such a bizarre year yeah. with COVID and with inheriting a roster that they'd never coached before. Mm-hmm. There were points where guys like Miles Battle and Tylan Knight were starting in the secondary and they opened the year on offense. It's just you had to throw guys out there because they just didn't have enough bodies. I'm going to give them the audition this year of, will this scheme work now that you have players, now that you brought in the number one and number two rated junior college defensive lineman in the country and the number 49 player in the country or something like that as a freshman who is a defensive tackle. Now that you have depth at that position, is it going to look better than the team that I think they had the second worst defense in college football last year by yards allowed per game? It's hard to get worse. It's actually a quote from a senior linebacker, Jaquez Jones. We can't get no worse. And
frame that, hang it on the wall.
Maybe that's true. I mean, mathematically, you can, but it's hard to imagine a team not getting a little bit better. That said, if they don't, this is a team that had the third best offense in the country last year by yardage, and I believe they scored seven more points than they allowed all year. That's kind of unacceptable.
Wow. Last thing, and I just want to ask you about just what is the feeling, the thought, the Ole Miss fan base about what's going on at Mississippi State? It's always fun to check in with the rival fan base, especially when both had similar situations, first-year coaches, and, hey, it kind of went our way, and, boy, it didn't go their way.
I think it's a sore talking point because it's a year that ends in a number. But both of these schools are proud of what they have. I think that State fans really like the returning production they have. And I think that's why something like the ESPN Football Power Index favors Mississippi State so highly, ranking them as the eighth best team in the country because they have so much returning production. But I was in Starkville last week while they were holding their spring game. And the consensus there was, is Will Rogers the starting quarterback, or is Jack Abraham, a sixth-year college guy who's transferred from Louisiana Tech to Northeast Mississippi Community College to Southern Miss to Mississippi State, who's now going to have his sixth offensive coordinator in 6 years, is he the guy? And when you have that question, it might be good, because Mike Leach has done wonders with 1 year of eligibility quarterbacks in the past. But I also think Ole Miss fans are probably a little more secure right now in knowing, okay, even if Ole Miss has to replace Elijah Moore, even if it has to replace Kenny Yeboah, they have a good feeling of what the team might be. Whereas State seems a little bit closer to square one, even though I will personally go on record and say I'm pretty high on State next year. I think they have a chance to be a pretty good team. It's just you know less about how.
Yeah, I mentioned last year, and I'll even say it going ahead, that I think that if you could have picked an all-star team, like literally from his time in Lubbock and at Wazoo, if you let him pick an all-star team, 11 guys from defenses that ever played for him, I think his defense in Starkville last year was better than anything he could have put together.
I think that's probably a good point. They might be just as good, if not a little bit better this year. Zach Arnett's doing a heck of a job building a defense there.
No doubt about it. All right, man. Appreciate your time as always. Talk soon, brother.
Anytime, Chuck.
All right, Nick Suss, Larry on Ledger.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save. And save and win.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
College football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
All week, all year, all college football on the Chuck Oliver Show. Been seeing a lot of commentary about how much Devonta Smith weighs. And I had mentioned a little bit of this. We were talking with Chris Landry. Obviously, we do that every Wednesday. And I was asking about Jalen Waddle specifically, but we talked about his size and Devonta, and just the, you know, the big news that came out was that Devonta's official measurements were, I think it was 165 pounds, and then one said 166 maybe. Oh my gosh, is he big enough to play receiver? I would like to DeLorean back in time to about 50 years ago. In the 1971 NFL draft, with the 19th pick in the first round of the 1971 NFL draft, the Oakland Raiders select Jack Tatum, safety, The Ohio State University. I was not paying attention, I will admit. I was two, I think. But when I was probably second grade, actually, I started watching NFL football. I was like, all right, this is different. And then by third grade, I wasn't analyzing games, but I was writing stuff down that in a very crude, very low-level way, I would give my evaluation of what was not happening right with my team. I'm going to date myself here. I don't have to. I'm 53, but if you go back, do you know what one of the big highlights in the 70s was for a kid? There was no Sports Center, folks. Monday Night Football, you would get a three-minute highlight reel of the previous day's all the action, which would be your first opportunity to see it. The following Saturday afternoon, there would be This Week in the NFL, which would be a 30-minute walk around the previous week, and then the NFL Game of the Week, and they would show like one game for about 20 minutes of it, and then highlights and all that, and then a couple of others. So you had to wait 6 days for that. So I'm like second or third grade, and I start paying attention to football. I'm like, okay, that guy is – he hits hard. It was Jack Tatum. His nickname was the Assassin. He was a safety for the Oakland Raiders. He's 5'10", about 200 pounds. And again – you can go YouTube it if you want to. But, I mean, he was known specifically, he's a hard hitter. I've talked about a guy that I knew, like, personally. In fact, we've traveled all around the United States for about 5 years. Doug Plank is a guy who also went to the Ohio State University. And he was not a first-round pick, but in 1975, he might have been like a 12th-round pick. It doesn't even exist anymore. The Chicago Bears. And he was not a big guy. And he said, I led Ohio State in tackles for 3 years because I hit everybody harder than anybody on the defense. He says, I was a little guy playing safety, and I had good enough speed, and I was strong enough for my size. He says, but I was not big. He says, but I hit you. He wore jersey number 46. That was the 46 defense that Buddy Ryan invented. So he goes on to the Bears, the same sort of thing. How did you get through an 8-year NFL career? I just hit everybody. That was life. As an NFL safety, through about the late 90s, Steve Atwater, like he was one on that last cusp of that's really who you wanted at safety. Now, Troy Polamalu, don't get me wrong, he'd light you up. But Troy was more about coverage. Ed Reed should have been playing either running back or wide receiver. But, I mean, he was that dynamic of a player with a ball in his hands. But the safety position sort of changed and had actually gotten de-emphasized because of the move away from the running game and then also de-emphasizing the tight ends. So safeties, their roles certainly changed. They weren't any less important. They just did very different things. And you no longer, like, think about it now. Right now, if you have an inside linebacker in the NFL, what's that guy got to do? He's got to run. And if they're playing the Tampa defense, he's got to get sometimes like 25 yards down the middle of the field in coverage. Do you know what an inside or a middle linebacker in a 4-3 did in 1978 in the NFL? Tackle to tackle, most likely guard to guard, possibly strong A, weak B. Thumper. He was a bouncer. Roles changed because of what the offense was doing. Well, it's that same thing. Jack Tatum, he got through by hitting everybody. And he was typical. Now, not everybody did it as often and also as violently as Jack Tatum. Not everybody had that reputation, and it was earned. In 1978, folks, you know Stingley playing for LSU? His granddad was Darryl Stingley. And he was a wide receiver for the Patriots. I think most people know this story. Darryl Stingley for the New England Patriots going across the middle. Jack Tatum lights him up, paralyzed him. Wheelchair, rest of his life. Now, as just tragic and awful as that is, when I talked about times change, do you know the footnote about that hit that is rarely mentioned? That was in a preseason game. In a preseason game, Jack Tatum said, here comes the receiver. That was life in the NFL in 1978, in August of 78. That was life. And that was life in 1983, and that was life in 1991, and that was life in 1998. It might have been life in 2002, for all I know. It's not life in the NFL now. It's not just that the change in approach from offenses has necessitated. If you get big old hulking bouncers playing safety, you're going to get picked on. You're going to get isolated in coverage, and then whoever the latter-day Jack Tatum is, they're going to be seeing the back of some guy's jersey get smaller and smaller and smaller. That's what's going to, coaching's too good. They'll find you. So if you can have that element of a guy who can also cover, that's great. You know what? If you've got that element, but maybe you're not great in cut, you know what you become? Deion Buchanan. And you get moved up to linebacker, which has happened a little bit around the league as well. It's not just offensive style and pace and play calling has necessitated a change in rule changes. And so now with smaller, quicker players scattered all over defense, Deion Jones from LSU, he plays inside linebacker, middle linebacker in the NFL, like 220 pounds. It's not just so many small, fast players over there. It's rule changes about how you can hit the receivers. If you somehow were able to drop Devonta Smith in 1978, I'm not kidding. He wouldn't make an NFL roster. He wouldn't last. He wouldn't last on an NFL roster. 2021, I got not one hesitation in the world about taking Devonta Smith wherever it is I need a receiver.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you? 3-1 smoked high in the air.
deep center field and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.